We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
But I get asked this question a lot because they know that Bob Stefanowski's on our program pretty much every Tuesday and has been for months. And so I'm asked this question a lot. And the question is Bob going to run again? And I say the same thing every time. I don't know. He hasn't said. He hasn't announced yet. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if he would want to use the show as an opportunity to do that. Big audience, people like him. Yeah, I don't know. But anyway, joining us now, the former chief financial officer of UBS, former candidate for governor here in the state of Connecticut, Bob Stefanowski. Hello, Mr. Stefanowski. How are you?
Good morning, Pastor Will. How are you?
Good. So I don't want to put any pressure on you here, but would you like to make any kind of an announcement this morning? Or
No announcements this morning, though. But I'll tell you, every week it's worse with our current governor, doesn't it?
I mean, that's unbelievable. Yeah. This guy's making it up as he goes along. It's just, but seriously, people ask me. I'm going to tell you at least once a week, and it's probably more than that. I don't want to exaggerate, but at least once a week, someone says, "Hey, is Stefanowski running again?" I said, "I don't know. He hadn't said anything yet. I don't know." So I mean, people are wondering, you know, and I'm just thinking if you have any inclination that, you know, that you'd want to make the announcement, you know, feel free.
No, I mean, anyway, you know, that's a tough decision. We have tried to stay active, though, as you know.
Oh, you have been, absolutely, yes.
Fighting tolls, and we're just going to keep fighting the fight, and we'll see what happens.
Been doing a good job. It's wonderful to know that you're still out there, which a lot of times, you know, people, you know, for whatever reason. Of course, it was your first effort. You've never ran for anything before, right? So, I mean, it's not an easy thing. People think it's easy. It's not easy at all to run for office.
No, I'll tell you, running for statewide office is really hard. That's why most first-time candidates don't run. I mean, Lamont ran three times.
Yeah, right.
Roland ran a couple times. I mean, you look at the last four or five governors, I don't think any of them won first time around. It's the type of thing you cannot prepare somebody for.
Just
learn so much going through it. But we got close. I mean, we got very, very close.
John Roland blames me for the first time he lost when he ran for governor. Because we looked very similar. It's a long story. I don't have time to go into it. But we looked kind of similar back then in our younger days. And I was going on impersonating him. And he said that I impersonated him so much that people thought it was me, not really him. So that's why he lost. And I can't argue that. He could be right. I don't know. Anyway. Let me ask you a question. This isn't state, but I've been on this. I've been fascinated by this. Something that happened over the weekend, of course, with the death of Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I mean, it's put a whole new shake into this election. I mean, I don't know what else could have happened more destabilizing. You know, it's like throwing a hand grenade in the middle of a barroom fight. I mean, it was an amazing, you know, the news was shocking to everybody when they got it. Even though she's 87, even though she fought numerous times with cancer, but I think everybody expected her to make it through the election. And in response to this, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez tells her followers, and she's got a lot of them, 6 million on social media, to radicalize. She's let this moment radicalize you. Now, when I hear the word radicalize, I generally think of a negative connotation. You know, we talk about radical Islam and radicalization. But is the point she's making a valid one for where we are as people who love the country and believe in the Constitution and want America to continue to prosper? Is it a valid point, do you think?
No, absolutely not. And, you know, she's one of the most extreme people in Washington. And she's not healthy for our nation or for our state or for anybody, quite honestly. And you look at what's going on in the country right now, it's just hard to imagine, you know, where are the principles of liberty? Where is the pride in our country? You know, who would have thought we'd be having in 2020, you know, riots in the streets where people that have spent 20, 25 years building a business. You know, both black, white, you know, every type of business being burnt down after 20, 25 years through no fault of their own. I think it's sad where AOC and others have brought this country. And I do think I see a lot of, particularly in Connecticut, a lot of, you know, people on our side of the aisle here stepping up and saying enough is enough.
Well, I think we have to at this point. I think if you're just going to be passive about it, you're going to lose. But, I mean, I carry that same thought process to Connecticut. I mean, there was a time, and you remember this as well as I do, there was a time Connecticut was like the jewel of the East Coast. I mean, we were the most attractive place to live. I mean, there was a reason in 1984 that GE moved its world headquarters here. There was a reason for that, because it was so beautiful, it was so attractive, and people wanted to raise their families here and go to school here and live here and enjoy the four seasons. I mean, we've come so far since that time that GE made the decision to make Connecticut its home. Can you think we ever get back to that? I mean, those days seem so far gone at this point. I don't know what the future for Connecticut holds.
I think we can get back to it. A lot of it starts with the economy. If you remember back then, we did not have any state income tax. And people in New York were coming out of New York. They were living in Connecticut. Fairfield County was booming. We had good schools. And then two things happened, Pastor. Well, number one is Lowell-Weicker put the income tax in. And number two, the state employee pension plan started to get to be so lucrative that it became out of control to the point where we've got a $100 billion liability. So all of those tax revenues that come in, they weren't used to fund the pension plan. They were wasted on a whole variety of things. And, you know, you fast forward to 20 years later, and nobody wants to live here anymore. And people simply can't afford to live. I shouldn't say no one wants to live here anymore. Everyone wants to live here, but many people cannot afford to live here.
Right.
That's the problem. They don't want to leave, but they can't afford to live here anymore. It's as simple as that.
And it's just too bad. I mean, I remember when I would travel as a young person, and I would go to other parts of the country, and they'd, oh, where do you live? I go, Connecticut. And there's almost an immediate response of, oh, well, you know, like you know, they didn't know who you were. They didn't know, but they assumed that you lived in Connecticut, you know, that you were a person of means. Now you travel and you tell people from Connecticut, they either laugh, chuckle, or say they're sorry. So, I mean, it's just heartbreaking that we've gone to, you know, and even years before GE, I mean, you think of the literature, the artists, the writers that lived in Connecticut, in Hartford. I mean, it really was. It was a spectacular place to live. And, you know, 40, 50 years of Democrat rule have just completely turned it into an economic wasteland.
Well, I'll tell you who's the most unfortunate is our kids. My dad went to Hill House High School in New Haven. He never went to college. He worked at the phone company for 30 years. He ran the scoreboard at the Yale Bowl on weekends. And he saved his money. He bought a house with a $25,000 mortgage that he paid off over 30 years. He saved up money to put me and my three older sisters with no financial aid through college. He was married to my mom for 60 years. He's 90 years old right now, and he's still living in the home that he bought, you know, 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah.
Our kids today don't have that same opportunity, Pastor Will. And that's the fundamental problem, because it's just too expensive to live here.
I mean, I hate to say this, but if it wasn't for the church, and I mean, the church, I poured the better part of my adult life, and my wife is, as well, has poured the better part of our adult lives into this thing, and don't feel we're done yet. But if it wasn't for the church, I mean, we would leave. We wouldn't stay. And one of my best friends, really, in the whole world, and he and his wife were literally the first of the five people that helped start the church, including my wife and I. They're moving to South Carolina, bought a beautiful house, and paying, you know, beautiful house, less taxes, a better climate. Yeah, I mean, I don't even know how to respond to, you know, he told me he was leaving. I was stunned. But that's the response. People are saying, why put up with this? Why deal with the taxes, the electricity rates? The Eversource crying they need a $700 million loan now. Because, I mean, come on, this is ridiculous. And I don't see the exodus slowing down. I see it accelerating.
Well, the problem is, and there are a lot of good state representatives up in Hartford, but there are a lot that could care less about the consumer. And you raise Eversource. It's the perfect example. You know, the storm was 45 days ago. What thing has changed since that storm hit to protect consumers? Absolutely nothing. There's been a lot of hearings. And the latest news, to your point, is that Eversource wants the Connecticut residents a loan for $700 million. So what's going on? Nothing's moving in the right direction. It's a bunch of, you know, rhetoric up there. Ridiculous requests for even more money from people whose bills have already doubled for lousy service. And there doesn't seem to be any action whatsoever to protect, you know, the consumer. And we're the ones paying the bills.
I mean, how do they possibly begin to ask after the rate increase debacle that I think you can blame on the General Assembly? I don't really think you blame that necessarily on Eversource. But the power outage debacle, it's not like they're not making money. I mean, I don't understand how you possibly, with a straight face and any sense of good conscience, asks for a $700 million loan. It just, I don't even know how you do that. I mean, what's the thought process there? If you're part of a global corporation, I mean, what's your corporate responsibility in this? I mean, there must be some. Apparently not. There's no shame involved, but. How do you explain that, do you think? How are they rationalizing a $700 million loan?
I don't think the CEO has distinguished himself of Eversource from the start. Because if you remember when it first hit, he didn't even show up for the first couple press conferences. And when you're running a company like that, whether you're responsible or not, the buck stops with you. So you need to get out there and you need to be on top of it. And then the ratepayers of Connecticut, we're customers.
Right.
And the rule of business is you treat your customers well. Mm-hmm. So here's a company with $42 billion of assets. They've got $42 billion of assets.
Right.
Their executives make $40 million a year. They made close to $1 billion last year.
Yeah.
And they have losses from the storm. And rather than paying any of it themselves, they want to pass the entire $700 million back to consumers. It's actually beyond belief that they even brought it up as an idea, Festival.
Well, it's funny because I'm looking right now at their annual report last year. Their income last year, you mentioned they made almost $1 billion. Well, it's close. It's $900 million. So it's right. Like, you that was your net income, and you're asking for $700 million. It's almost laughable. In terms of the dollar amount, if you made almost $1 billion last year, now you're asking for $700 million. I mean, I don't know.
It just shows a complete lack of awareness. They're also, the way their rates work, they are guaranteed, regardless of what they do, they're guaranteed a 9% return.
Yeah.
So that's a guarantee by the regulators. Who gets a 9% return today? The money I've got in my bank account makes one quarter of 1%.
Why
does Eversource get to set rates such that they make a 9% return on the backs of consumers in Connecticut every year? It's bizarre.
It makes no sense at all. But, you know, I guess maybe that's part and parcel why you've got companies like, you know, GE moved out and Aetna moved out and different companies moved out because all the gun companies moved out, just because there's really no sense in staying here and trying to do business here.
Well, the difference between GE and all those other companies who have moved out and Eversource is a monopoly.
Yeah,
and they
right.
pay a ton of money to lobbying, mm-hmm. and the government officials take care of them, so they don't need to move out. They've got a great deal, right? They've got a guaranteed return.
Yeah.
Like, why would they ever move out? The ones that have market competition and have to pay taxes and have to deal with the burdensome regulations, they're gone.
Yeah,
GE's out.
Right, right.
And that's the big difference.
Well, just like in a smaller sense, in a micro sense, that's how residents look at it. They go, why should we stay here and pay these outrageous taxes, income tax, property tax? We can take our same basically annual income that we have now. We can move to South Carolina and we can get a $15,000 raise by doing nothing except moving. Why wouldn't you do that, right?
And what's sad, Pastor Will, is I met a lot of those people on the campaign trail. And I can't remember one of them saying they wanted to leave Connecticut. It was not, I want to leave my friends and families. It was not, I don't enjoy the diversity of Connecticut. It was not, I don't like Four Seasons. It was, I hate to leave, but I can't afford to be here. And that should be something with the right leadership we can fix. And that's the sad part about it.
Yeah. Well, we're coming into a very contentious period with this election. Not coming into it. We've leaped into it. We're full blown into it. And now there's a vacancy on the court. And obviously the left is saying, "Oh, how dare you? You can't replace this person now." The Constitution seems pretty clear. It's the president's responsibility when there's an opening to make a nomination. And Mitch McConnell seems to be signaling that there's enough votes to do it. Is this the appropriate time in your mind to fill that vacancy on the Supreme Court?
Absolutely, 1,000%. We've got an elected president. He won fair and square. It's within his rights. It's actually required that he pick a new justice. That justice should go through the process. But in my mind, there's no excuse whatsoever to even argue for a delay. You know, the only argument is that it's partisan. Right? There's no other reason the Democrats can argue it other than they're being purely partisan. And that argument with a critical, one of the most critical decisions, you know, that you can ever make should be to the person who's been elected. And that's, you know, President Trump. It's as simple as that.
Is it surprising at all to you the response that you're getting from the left? There was apparently a New York Times reporter who posted on his personal Twitter account, "If they fill this seat, we're going to burn this thing down." I don't know what that means. I don't know what exactly he's talking about, burning the thing down. But you've got Chuck Schumer standing right next to AOC yesterday saying that if they fill this seat, then nothing is off the table. And I don't even know what that means. Nothing is off the table. I don't know what they're trying to indicate or intimidate with that kind of language. But is it surprising to you that they're having such a seriously violent kind of response to doing something that is perfectly legal?
I'll tell you, it's a shame, but it doesn't. But to have that level of disrespect for America, for the Constitution, for an elected president, it's just bizarre. And it's where you started this conversation with AOC. Mm-hmm. Some of this rhetoric is just out of control.
Yeah.
You know, you get to the point, Pastor Will, where you think, if they're so uncomfortable with our country, why don't, you know, go leave?
Yeah, why are you
right?
here?
AOC, if you're that unhappy with it, go somewhere else. I mean, you got to live by the rules that it's worked pretty well for a long time.
It sure has. All right. Well, listen, thank you so much. I know the folks love hearing from you. I'll continue, I'm sure, to be asked, are you running? And I'll have to say, I don't know. So whenever you make the decision and you'd like to make an announcement, please feel free to do it right here on the Will Marotti Program. Thank you so much.
Okay, we'll do that.
Great talking
you,
with you,
Pastor
Bob.
Will.
Thank you. Thank
have
you so much.
Yeah, bye-bye.
You too.